Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at cachefly.com. This is the iPhone Alley Podcast, episode 72 for January 31st, 2010. They called it the iPad. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the iPhone Alley Podcast. I'm Michael Johnston, and we're here to talk about all things iPhone, iPod Touch, App Store, and that other thing that Apple announced last week. With me is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
You're boycotting the name, right? Is that the deal?
I don't know. I might be. I can't.
Are you just boycotting the device?
They called it the iPad, okay?
It doesn't bother me anymore. I'm so over it. Actually, my biggest problem with that right now is that I know a million times I'm going to call it the iPod, and then I'm going to get email from
Steve Jobs called it the iPod.
He did. Thank God for that, because now I have like an out. I can just email people back like, Steve Jobs said it too. Shut up. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And also here is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing good. And as always, it's great to be here. And so far, I've done pretty good with keeping iPad and iPod separate.
Cool.
But it won't last.
Yeah.
My iPhone doesn't know the difference yet.
Yep, the iPhone doesn't.
But it will learn.
It wouldn't know the difference because that would be a tell, right?
Well, if it does know the difference, how is it going to be able to figure out the right context for when to use iPod or iPad?
Well, the A and the O are so far apart on the keyboard. So that's how it determines. I don't know how much you've studied how the iPhone's keyboard works. I know I do because I don't have a life.
Oh, now you're just getting into the science of it.
I don't have a life is what I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. And Ken Ray is here from the macOS Ken podcast, the wonderful macOS Ken podcast. Hey, Ken, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, Michael. How are you?
I'm good. So
I say iPad is the evolution of the iPod anyway, so eventually you'll be able to interchange them.
Okay. Well, it sounds like... Well, let's before we get to the iPad stuff, because that's just what we're going to be talking about, I think, this entire episode, I do want to go over two things quickly that happened before the iPad announcement. The first one was that Google launched their official Google Voice web app for the iPhone and, other phones that support that. So you can, instead of having a Google Voice application, as we talked about several months ago, Apple rejected the Google Voice app.
And now so
they never rejected it.
They never rejected it, but they never approved it.
Right. Yeah.
And that's a big difference.
It is a big difference. You're right. I'm sorry. So they made, in perfect Google form, they made a fully functional web app version of Google Voice, and it works pretty well. The day that it came out, I gave it a try, and of course the line was busy because you have to call Google Voice, and I think everybody was trying it. But it does work well. The only thing I'm disappointed about is that they didn't go the web app route, where there's a little tag that they can do when they're creating it, where if you do the bookmark to your home screen and open it up again, it doesn't open in Safari. It opens in its own little like web sheet thing, which I think is a little neater, but that's not a big deal.
Can I ask a question about Google Voice?
Yeah.
Let me ask a few questions actually about it. I found it hard to care or get excited because it's still private and you still have to have an invitation. But then when you use Google Voice, whether through the application on the iPhone that you're not going to be allowed to have or through the web app, you're still using your AT&T minutes, right?
Right.
Okay. Why do I care?
Okay. Well,
I mean,
there's
3G. There's VoIP over 3G is now allowed both through AT&T and through Apple, which means Skype's going to come along at some point, which means I'm just going to be using the data and not be using my minutes.
Sure.
And
okay.
So then I don't have to pay, I don't have to pay nearly as much. I don't know how much it costs with Google, but I'm not using up my minutes to call internationally or to call long distance. So why do I care about Google Voice? I mean, if it's something that I can't get into and if it's something that's going to use my minutes anyway, why am I excited?
I am not a huge expert on Google Voice, but I'll tell you a couple of reasons why I like it. The first thing is because people who want me to do things for them because I have a blog like to call me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want to give up my real phone number. I give them a Google Voice number. So if they call that number, I can have it you know, I can just see that they're calling and they can leave a message, or you can set up rules for certain people to, you know, just go right to voicemail, or, you know, if someone's in your contact list, you can have it ring forward to you and it'll display either the Google voice number or the phone number that's calling you. Mm-hmm. So that's one like huge advantage. And I think Adam, you use it for that purpose as well. And you'd probably do a better job at explaining the pros of Google Voice.
No, I mean, that's pretty much for me. I mean, it's a number that I can give out freely and not worry about. I mean, the other advantage long-term for some people is I know people who, you know, change their numbers a lot or get new cell phones and things like that. So you can have one universal number and then register all your other numbers with it, and you never have to change your Google Voice number. So as long as somebody has that number,
sure,
you know, they can get a hold of you.
Now, okay. Isn't it also that you can have it ring a bunch of different numbers?
Oh yeah, they all ring. You can set it up so they all ring simultaneously. You can also set up different voicemail greetings for different numbers. So that kind of freaks people out too.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You can set up a voice message for just one person and like greet them personally when you're not available to pick up your call. And it has other weird, and you can also do call screening with it, which you can't do with your cell phone voicemail. So it'll ring through, you pick up, and it says, "You have a call from," and then the person's name.
I need to turn that on. That's what
voicemail
I want.
And listen in on the voicemail and then pick up in the middle of it if you wanted to.
Oh, I want that.
I've never used that feature, but
I'm
going to
turn that feature on right now.
Okay, well, Then let me go the other way. Let's say by the end of this conversation, you get me excited about the Google Voice thing. Why is it still invitation only? And have they ever indicated when they're going to open it up to everyone?
So that's a little bit of history, because it used to be a company called Grand Central,
right?
And it was, I think it was you. If you got an account, they had invites turned on, and you could invite other people. They were beta, and then Google bought it, and I think they didn't know what to do with it or what they wanted to do with it, and they locked it all down. And they just have not turned that feature back on yet, and they keep saying they will. So I don't know if it's a bandwidth thing because of the VoIP or why they're throttling it, but they are severely throttling access to it. Although I've heard recently that if you go request an account,
I can give you an account. I have three.
Get one within a couple of weeks.
I have three invites available. I can see if you want one.
Sell them on eBay.
Well. I don't know. I kind of want one so I can try it out. I think you should probably edit out the part that where you say you've got three, because you'll probably get a few emails.
I don't have any more. I just sent them all out.
They're gone now.
They're all gone.
Ah, bummer.
It is great for voicemail. I mean, I used to have the L7 number, and I moved it to Google Voice just because it's much more convenient. And the new web app, I'm very happy about. It's much easier to use. It even has a little dialer now. So before it was not that easy to dial out using the Google Voice. I've never done that.
You can send text messages too, right? For free.
It does SMS as well.
It's free SMS from Google Voice.
Yeah.
Now, one thing I liked about it was when I was traveling internationally, I forwarded all my calls to my Google Voice number, all my voicemail. So then the messages would go in, and then of course it does the auto transcription thing. And then I had it sending me an SMS of each message. And since internationally receiving an SMS doesn't cost anything extra, I didn't have to pay extra money to have these calls come in and then screen them and decide who I needed to call back and spend my precious international minutes on. So it was a really nice way to screen calls when I knew every call was going to be very expensive for me.
Yeah, this is cool. So you can do like a do not disturb on your Google. So you say, okay, I'm taking a vacation. Don't want any calls from annoying people. Turn that on. Or you can do the call screening. It'll ask to say their name. I'm looking through here.
It'll
announce the caller's name and give answering options for call presentation. It'll show you either the Google Voice number or the caller's number when it calls your phone. It's cool.
The other nice feature I use from a podcast perspective is they have a widget. It's Flash, of course, but they have a widget you can put on your website, which I have up on mine, where someone can go there. They can put in their phone number if they want to leave me a voicemail, and the system will call them. I know it works in the States. I'm not sure about internationally, but at least in the United States, that way the person doesn't have to pay for long distance. They can actually leave a voicemail on my number by having the system call them. to leave that message.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
It seems like one of the coolest things about the Google Voice web app is just bringing, you know, sort of attention back to web apps and not in that sort of, you know, 2007, here's how you can develop for the iPhone way.
But I think
tried to sell the developers that really didn't fly so well in the beginning.
I think Gmail, I use Gmail. That's what I use. That we even, you know, at iPhone Alley, we have it's set up so our email is Gmail, and I love Gmail. And mail on the phone on the iPhone sucks, totally sucks. Even compared to Apple Mail on the Mac, I guess, which I don't use. I just use Gmail. So, you know, Gmail's a fantastic web app as well, and Google does that. You know, that's what their thing is, and that's why they're doing the Chrome OS. So they do that pretty well. But Ken, you mentioned VoIP, right, at some point, and that's one of the things on our list of things to talk about. And Apple actually finally enabled VoIP over 3G this last week in the SDK. I think with the updated SDK agreement from the iPad, Apple allowed that finally. I think at some point they publicly said that they were going to do that, right? And then AT&T said. How did that go? I can't remember.
I don't remember them ever saying publicly that they were going to do it. I remember AT&T saying, hey, it wouldn't bother us.
Okay, right.
I want to say that was back in October.
Yeah, and we were waiting for Apple to update their SDK, I guess, right?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Which they then did this past week. And I think we found that out sort of at the same time that we found out that iCall had, like, it was on. Mm-hmm. Which I don't really understand exactly. I mean, that's a turnaround of nothing. Either that or iCall had gone ahead and submitted, and when Apple went ahead and updated the SDK, they went ahead and approved it. I don't understand how it worked exactly.
So
that we heard that Apple was okay with VoIP over 3G, and like within the hour, there's one, and it's iCall. And then within a couple of days, there's Spring. Now, what's weird is Skype said, what, a week ago, a week and a half ago? We're ready with 3G.
Right.
We're ready with VoIP over 3G as soon as Apple's ready. And then Apple's, you know, had it out now for like 3 or 4 days, and no word from Skype.
I think we're just waiting for the approval on that, right? Or are you saying?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Or I suppose there's a possibility that when iCall did their thing, it was just luck of the draw. They thought, hey, let's submit it and see what happens.
Yeah.
And it gets approved. And, excuse me. And maybe Apple has everything hammered out for VoIP over 3G. Maybe they don't. So we might be in some kind of weird transition phase where what appears to be finished and ready to go, maybe not so much. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So we should keep trudging along, though. Apple has said, this is just a brief thing, Apple has said that during their quarterly conference call, I think it was Peter Oppenheimer mentioned that the App Store as well as the iTunes Store, they run slightly above break even.
Right.
So, and a lot of people assumed that the 30% Apple was getting from developers to quote unquote cover the costs of distributing apps made them buttloads of money. And I never understood that, really. I thought maybe these people knew something I didn't, but then I heard that during the call, and, you know, that's what it is. That's what I assumed it was.
You're a podcaster. you know the astronomical cost for most mere mortals for bandwidth. I mean, when Apple's pushing that many apps, and I'd be curious to know, too, what percentage, do we know what percentage are free apps versus paid apps?
I don't know. I don't want to even think about that because it's one of those things that dilutes the amount of the App Store. But yeah, it's significant. And, you know, not only do they have to pay for bandwidth with, you know, who do they, Akamai, I think they serve with, and that's got to be pretty expensive. They also have to pay these app reviewers. And it seems like lately they've really stepped it up. So they've got a lot of app reviewers and they're working a lot of hours, and, you know, it makes sense that they're simply paying for the ability to run the App Store, and it's something for to sell hardware.
I was frankly glad to hear they're not taking a loss. I mean,
yeah,
at least they're covering their costs.
That is good, for sure.
I think it's a bonus for them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't know. I mean, come on.
Servers are expensive,
You're saying you
servers
don't believe
are expensive,
them?
But here's the deal. How much money are they making? So you can say they're only operating a little bit above break even.
And you want to know how much
thing,
a little bit
above. If you're making so much money, then a little bit above break even is a lot of money.
That's true.
I mean, it's not necessarily a lot of money for Apple, but it's not like, we got five extra dollars. Go out and get Cokes for your five best performing app reviewers, and then we don't have anything else for the App Store.
Okay. Right. Well, I mean, we could induce it backwards. I mean, so 3 billion sold, right? That's what Steve Jobs said at this latest keynote, or downloaded.
Right.
Sorry, 3 billion
but
downloaded.
But it didn't break out if that's just new downloads or if that includes updates.
Well, it doesn't include updates.
When they said 2 billion, though, I mean, and when they said 1 billion, they made it clear both of those times that they were talking about
new
individual downloads, not updates. Yeah.
Right.
So
right.
I would assume that the 3 billion is the same.
Yeah.
Now, how many of us actually download? So it wouldn't be a re-download. So let's just say 3 billion new downloads.
Okay.
Right. And half there. I mean, you can do the math. How many? We don't really know. But if you assume half are paid and half are not paid, and I have a feeling it's probably more free than we actually realize.
I'm not saying they're making a ton of money off of it. I'm just saying they almost seem to get this like, oh, poor thing, every time people talk about how much money they're not making on iTunes or on the App Store.
I don't feel bad. No, I don't feel bad for them at all.
That's
the only
thing that bugs me about it. I mean, I'm not okay.
I didn't mean to give them a negative impression. I'm just saying. Everybody assumes they're making a ton of money, or a lot of people. I shouldn't say everybody. That's not fair. A lot of people, as Michael was saying, assume Apple's making a ton of money off the App Store. And I don't think it's that shocking to find out that they're not making that much money, that they're making – they're running in the black, which means they're making some money, right?
Right, right. Yep. By volume, right?
I mean, that's pretty much how it works.
Yeah.
But the bigger benefit, which I think he also pointed out, and Oppenheimer also mentioned that thing, is that – look, this is really, you know, solidifying the iPhone and the iPod Touch as, you know, as dominant devices. And I think he's right. I mean, without the App Store, I don't think the iPhone would be nearly as huge as it is right now.
Right. And paves the way then for the thing that Michael's
that
not mentioning.
Device.
That I don't like.
You know, the App Store totally makes sense as a system that doesn't make money hand over fist, because its purpose, just like the iTunes store, is to sell hardware, like we've been saying. And right. Apple never kept that a secret. When they were talking about the iTunes store back when it was the iTunes Music Store, they talked about how that was a system to sell iPods, not a system to make them money as a music distributor.
Yeah. Now, Ken, do you I think last time they did their earnings call, you went through their – did you look through some of the documents?
What you mean, back in September?
Maybe. I don't know when.
Or October?
Something like
maybe.
That.
Maybe. I don't know. That was like 3.5 months ago, dude.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying that if you're really curious, you can go look through – I'm not that curious. Maybe I am. We'll see what happens later tonight. But, it might be $1 billion, depending on how. Probably
well, I mean,
not a billion.
What are you asking about?
Million. I'm just thinking the total amount that they make. You're saying the relatively, it might be a lot of money.
I want to say, well,
no, or it might not be a lot of money.
It's not a lot of money for Apple. I understand that. Although
there,
I want to say in the fourth quarter of fiscal year 2009, somewhere the number came out that it was something like 10 or 11% of Apple's earnings.
Oh,
for the year came from iTunes.
But is that gross or is it net?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't remember.
All right, let's move on.
But 10 to 11% though is not a small amount.
No, not at
all.
I mean,
obviously it's not 89 to 90%, but I mean it's also not 3.
Yeah.
I mean it's
we'll come back with more details on this.
Yeah, let's do that, please.
Yeah. We'll regroup and but anyway, let's move on to the main story, the main event, the thing that we all want to talk about or maybe not talk about. On January 27th, Steve Jobs took the stage and announced the iPad, Apple's tablet,
And Michael, you sound so excited.
I was so excited. I woke up a half an hour before my alarm that day, and I sat there preparing our meta coverage because they didn't invite anybody. Well, they invited several, you know, lots of people, but none of the usual suspects.
It was weird who they did.
They didn't invite the Mac Observer, which just shocked me. Jeff's wonderful. He's managing editor at the Mac Observer. And they're always invited, right? You're always invited to these Apple events.
But not this one. That was weird.
It's even weirder now that we see what it is. You know, why wouldn't you be invited? But, okay, so when I watched the keynote, Steve Jobs sounded kind of hoarse and maybe like an old dude to me. He sounded like
Michael,
a super...
Michael, think about this.
Well, he is an old dude.
No.
And he lived through...
I should rephrase. He sounded maybe a little bit confused.
That does sound better.
Hi, I'm senile. Steve.
Let's cut to the chase, Michael. You think he's senile?
Yes, that's exactly what I think. This product that he unveiled, he got very excited about it, and I'm not sure. You know, Michael Arrington, with his comments about it, you know, possibly being Steve Jobs' greatest creation, he said that was something he heard from someone who actually heard it from Steve. I'm not sure about that. I guess the thing is...
But that also came from Michael Arrington.
Arrington, who's, well, a little nuts too. But, you know, it wasn't as amazing as I was expecting. I was expecting more of a Mac than an iPod or an iPhone because it's a...
Really?
Yeah. It's a big-ass iPod, right?
I was hoping for more of a Mac than an iPod.
Okay, thank you.
Towards the end of it, I couldn't expect it anymore because there were too many people saying, you know, that I was drunk.
Right. No. Okay.
If I was expecting anything besides, you know, the great big iPod touch.
Okay, so let's go into the details of this in case you've been living under a rock and you have no idea what's going on. It's 9.7 inches diagonal widescreen. It's multi-touch. Think about, just envision, close your eyes, unless you're driving. Think about an iPod touch.
Or flying,
yeah. or driving a truck.
Or think walking. About it. Yep. Don't close your eyes.
Think
if
about
you
an
are
iPod
not
Touch.
Stationary. Keep your eyes open.
Think about an iPod Touch, and just make it bigger. Okay, good. And then add a.
Wait. I'm sorry. Am I making it thicker?
No, you're making the screen larger. Oh, it's actually okay. Just as. Isn't it slightly? It's very slightly, like 0.02 millimeters thicker than the iPhone. It's very thin. The hardware is marvelous, I have to say. It's an aluminum unibody. The front is all glass. It's multi-touch. It's got a nice big bezel so you can grab onto it. At first you think, why is there such a big bezel on it? And well, it's because you have to hold onto it somehow. Right? So it's but if you look at the thing that really disappointed me when I first saw it is, well, okay, so you turn on the screen. It's always on, which is wonderful. It has 10 hours of total usage battery life and a month of standby time, and it's always on, just like the iPod. So you hit the button, and then it has a slide to unlock thing, which I thought was kind of silly because it looks like they took the exact same sized slider from the iPod and put it just right there. And I understand it would be a little overkill for a huge slide to unlock thing, but you look at it, you unlock the screen, and it's the home screen of an iPod with a background, and that's what really disappointed me about the software. And well, that's just the smallest of my my nags, but I'll talk about some pros because I know we don't want to hear me nag about this the entire time because I do like a lot of parts of it. Hardware is great, like I said. So it's a 9.7 inch screen, 0.5 inches thick, 10 hours of battery life, 1 month standby. It comes in three sizes, 16 gigabyte, 32 and 64. So
three capacities.
Yep. Yeah. Three capacities. Dot connector, that's the only I.O. So it's the standard iPod dot connector.
It has Bluetooth.
True. So you can put stuff in and out with that, right? I.O. Wi-Fi as well. 802.11n, which is very cool.
Yeah, that's right, 802.11n.
So in a device like this with, you know, that amount of battery life, you know, it remains to be seen, but, you know, 802.11n with 10 hours of battery life, that's pretty slick, right? That's good.
Yeah, that's really nice.
And it's a solid state drive. It has an accelerometer, compass, Bluetooth, like you said. And there's also a 3G version, which has 3G connectivity. It's completely unlocked if you get the 3G version. And that means you can, it also comes with, the 3G model is $130 on top of whichever model you get.
Right, and it uses a micro SIM, not a standard SIM.
Right, but the SIM is just in there, right? So as far as I know, you get the one that fits your...
I'm betting it ships with an AT&T SIM, but then you can go get a SIM from anyone else.
Yeah, so it ships with an AT&T SIM, but it is unlocked. The service, so built in for the 3G part of it, they say that it's a very simple, seamless way to subscribe to the data. So you buy it, you sign no contract. If you want to get the 3G data on your 3G version of the iPad, you go in there and you say, I want 3G service, and it's $15 a month for 250 megabytes or $30 for unlimited.
And that also gets you unlimited Wi-Fi access, assuming you do the AT&T plan, which is what you're talking about.
Now, do you
unlimited
have
access, Wi-Fi access at AT&T hotspots?
Do you have to get the 3G version to get the unlimited Wi-Fi?
I would assume so, because I think that's part of the data plan you're buying.
Possibly. Yeah, I don't...
But if you have like a... you know, a Starbucks card that gets you X number of hours a week or whatever it is, then you could just use that too.
Gotcha. Okay. So it also has, I think they initially said speakers, like plural speaker. Is there?
Yeah, it's got like three little speakers. So
I think those are just, from what I've heard, it's just one speaker with three little separators. Jeff, do you know, or Adam?
Sorry, go ahead, Adam.
Okay, I'll go ahead.
wait, I want to go. Okay, you guys go ahead now.
Okay, all right. So I believe it's one speaker, but they put the little three slot grill thing because it's on the bottom, like off to the side from the dock connector, or if you hold it sideways, on the side above the dock connector. But I believe it's a single speaker.
Okay, so but I'm guessing it's a fairly decent speaker, maybe something a little less than a MacBook, but more than an iPhone.
Yeah, it's definitely more than an iPhone. Yeah,
which is good because it's supposed to be an experience of, you know, whatever.
What I've heard from people that were at the event and could go hands on with the iPad, they were saying, yeah, it's okay for a speaker.
Yeah, well, they were also in a press, you know, briefing room where there was a lot of talking and. Right. Stuff going on, you know, the iPhone speaker is fine for me. If I'm using my iPhone and I'm listening to a podcast, you know, the speaker's fine. So I'm sure in this case, the speaker on it will also be good. It has a microphone. It's placed at the top of the device, which I think makes sense because you don't want to have feedback going on. It also has headphone jack, so you can plug in your regular iPod headphones. Let's see here. It has a special 1 gigahertz Apple custom designed processor. Well, it's a system on a chip. It's not just the CPU, right? It's the graphics CPU.
Right.
And what else is in there? Graphics CPU, something else. It's called the A4. And from everything that I've heard from anyone who's played with the iPad, it's screaming fast, right?
Well, it totally makes sense. It should be because Apple's able to fine-tune all the components because they control everything, including the chip design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why they bought PA Semi.
Yep. This is a PA Semi. Finally, we're seeing from, you know, them acquiring that company. From everything I've heard, it's an ARM-based design as far as the CPU, although we haven't really heard a whole lot on that because we don't have the device yet.
Well, it would make sense for it to be an ARM CPU because that's what you have in the iPhone and iPod Touch.
Right.
And it can run those apps without emulation. So.
And that's what PA Semi did as well, right?
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They were masters at ARM and strong ARM.
Makes total sense. It also has video out via the dock connector, something that, the iPhone and iPod do video out, but only for movies. So the video out, it does 480p, right? And
right.
That's with a you know, the special dot connector cable. So you can do video, but you can also, if your app is written for it to take advantage of this, you can also display content on an external monitor, which is something new for the iPad, which is cool.
Which makes it totally usable as a presentation tool.
Yeah, totally. And the pricing on it is $4.99 for the 16, $5.99 for the 32, and $6.99 for the 64. And like I said before, it's $130 on top of each price for the 3G version. They also announced some accessories, which I think are kind of cool. The they have a standard, you know, dock style dock for the iPad, so you plunk it down and it can be your little you know, picture frame if you want. It also is that, how much is that? Is that $40 I think for that dock?
No, it's $29.
$29 for the dock. Okay, so and then it's $60 for the keyboard. I think you can get a the standard dock plus a keyboard that's attached to it, so you can get a full sized Apple keyboard for your iPad if you want, which is cool. You can also hook up a Bluetooth keyboard, right? No mouse though,
which is very cool.
That's very cool. They will be selling a case for it, which I think everybody should get, not only because it just protects it, but because it lets you it converts into a stand. Yeah, so you can stand it up for movies. You can kind of slant it upward for typing on. So it has a virtual keyboard. Yeah, so that's for the hardware. It's also got a you know, ringer up down. It's got the home screen or home button, the silent switch, which is good. And yeah, so it's a big iPod. It's got the standard you know, set of apps. It's got Safari, iPod, iTunes, App Store, Mail, Photos, Video, YouTube, Maps, Notes, Calendar, Contacts. So the at first glance, if you look at the iPad, I was really disappointed because it seemed, like I said before, it didn't seem like this revolutionary thing. It didn't seem like a Mac that they made into a touch. It's really just an iPhone with a couple extra optimizations on the home screen. So it's the standard home screen layout kind of deal, except the dock at the bottom looks more like the Leopard dock, and you can fit six icons down there instead of four. But the magic for me happens when you open the apps, right? Because they did a fantastic job, at least with the apps. I hope they kind of rewrite the springboard to reflect the iPad being something different, you know, maybe by the time we get it. But all the applications have been rewritten, and they all look absolutely awesome. The iPod looks like a next generation version of iTunes. I'm actually most excited to check out the iPod on the iPad because it looks fantastic. Have you guys seen screenshots of it looks like iTunes, right? Minus the store part.
Yeah, it looks really slick.
Yeah, it's very cool. Let's see, what else? Safari looks fantastic. They kind of, you know, they move things around because it's a much bigger screen, and it's much easier to use. And see, so there's a lot more screen real estate and all that. And so, absolutely everything, it can be done in portrait or landscape. You can even do a landscape version of the home screen if you want. And everybody says that that transition is very fast. The calendar looks very cool. Maps is, you know, it's essentially the same deal, except the entire interface is gone. It's just a big map, and you curl up the page and you do stuff with that. It's really the same sort of deal with a much bigger screen. So what do you guys think of it?
I'm actually really excited.
Okay,
go ahead, Ken.
Okay, Ken, go.
Well, I mean, you left off iWork.
Oh yeah. Okay, so we're. Yeah.
I mean, that to me was where it got exciting, because when I first saw it, I was like, eh. I mean, everything's pretty.
Yeah.
And I do like the fact that it's bigger, but I can't remember where I said this. I might have said this on day six, or I might have said it on macOS Ken. I can't remember which, but honestly, apps have always been sort of like neat things that you could do on your phone to me, but I've never really, it's never been quite the tool.
Right. Yeah.
That I know a lot of people use it as. And when I saw iWork, and when I saw the real estate that I'm going to have, and when I started thinking about the other things that a lot of other people are doing with their iPhones. I mean, using them as a tool, because I mean, you know, I work from home, so I've got my computer, I've got my laptop. If I go out someplace else, I'm not using the iPhone as much of a tool as it could be. I'm using it more for an iPod and a phone than, you know, play some games and stuff like that. The potential for the iPad to be a real productivity tool, I felt like was shown off excellently to everyone with the iWork demonstration, which of course is Keynote, Numbers, and Pages, yeah, which they've rewritten for the iPad specifically. And the other amazing thing is you don't have to buy all three, which I love. I mean, I would have bought Pages a while ago, probably just to try it out. But I wasn't interested in spending $70 on all three of them because I only have use for one. And the fact that it's only going to be $10 for whichever one you want, or $30 for all three, is kind of stellar. I mean, that was a neat thing that they did, I think. And yeah, that was the thing that turned me on.
Yeah, and the interface of it, you know, like you said, it's completely rewritten. And so the interface is perfect for the iPad. So everything is touchable. They have these new pop-over inspector things, and the interface just looks just so cool to use for getting iWork stuff done. You can, you know, like I said, there's a virtual keyboard, so you don't have to have the special keyboard add-on. You can, you know, do all your work. And I honestly haven't heard a lot of impressions about the virtual keyboard yet. Maybe you guys have heard things.
What I've been hearing people say is that it works pretty well, which is about all you can expect from a virtual keyboard, mm-hmm, at this point in time. Mm-hmm. And so it's bigger keys, easier for people to hit, but since it's a virtual keyboard, you can't touch type.
Right, yeah. Even though it does, right, have, it actually has a little, the little dots on the J and the F keys virtually. You can't feel them, obviously, when you go to touch it, but they're there. It's a nice little aesthetic thing. But
right,
iWork, I think they kind of set the price of productivity apps, right, with iWork? Because $10 for Pages, $10 for Numbers, or $10 for Keynote.
Well, they set the price for their apps.
Well, I think
set the price in what way? Do you think they said, okay, it's okay to ask for $10 for an app and that's not going to seem ridiculous? Or do you think people like Microsoft or anybody else, Sun, if they were ever going to make an app for their open office? I mean, do you think everybody else was looking at it going, $10? Really? Like, it has to be that low? I mean, which way do you think they set it? Did they set it higher? Did they set it low at that point?
I'm not sure.
I think they set it low.
Yeah.
I was going to say, let's put it another way. Would you have balked if they had come out and said these are going to be $20 each and you can buy them individually? Would anybody have said, oh, $20 for app?
I think people would have just said, oh, cool.
Okay. So the $10 is kind of stunning.
Yeah, I think $20 per app would have been totally acceptable because they're selling them individually.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there's a lot of people like you that wouldn't need to have all three. And so they, you know, maybe they spent the $80 to buy iWork for their computer.
Right.
And now they just need to buy Keynote for their iPad.
Right. And that's the thing, too. That's the other thing. Do I need Keynote? No, I don't need Keynote. But you know what? For $10, assuming I get an iPad, I might go ahead and get it because it seems like it would be fun to play with. I'm not going to spend $80 on the box set if I don't need any of it. But, you know, it's like all the 99-cent apps, except bigger now. I mean, because there's so much more you can do it, and it's on this big screen, and because Steve Jobs touched it and it looked so cool, and because you can plug it in and, you know, play it other places and all that stuff. I mean, $10 is, it's not quite a, it's not tiny, but it's not, as you said, it's not, you know, 20 or 30 or.
Yeah, I would have paid
for the whole bundle.
I would have done $20 for Pages. Sure, totally.
Yeah,
Pages is a great app, and, you know, there really aren't a lot of photos on Apple's page right now demonstrating those iWork applications. But in the demo, they look fantastic. They look easy to use. It looks like they have most of the features that the desktop components have, right? And it's exciting to see what, you know, this amount of screen real estate can do, can offer a software developer, because it's just, even though it is still running the iPhone OS, you can do so much more with just a little bit more space. So, let's see. Where are we? Okay, iBooks. I think they should have called it Books. I don't know why they called it iBooks, because they had a product. I don't know if you kiddies remember iBook, the iBook. It used to be the, you know, that's what the MacBook used to be. But we won't go into that. So iBooks looks very cool as well. I think a little over-designed maybe, but nevertheless, they not only is it just a book reader where you can store all of your books in a very delicious library / classics style way, where you see all the book covers on the shelf and you click one and it opens up. But you also tap the store button and the interface flips over and you can get to the a brand new store that Apple has created for the iPad called the iBooks Store, where you can get books.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's clear that Apple has every intention of taking the Kindle market.
Destroying it is what you mean, I think.
Yes. So, I mean, they've taken the Kindle idea, and Steve Jobs even said, we are standing on Amazon's shoulders,
yeah,
or
he
the
did
Kindle
say that.
Shoulders.
Yep.
And that is not something he said offhanded. That was a very intentional statement. So, yeah, Apple has created this bookstore and this ebook reader where you can have multimedia directly inside your books, and they've addressed the issues that many publishers and schools have had with the Kindle DX, which is lack of interactivity, lack of color images, all those things. It's handled right here.
Yeah, and it's obviously much easier to use because you just tap on the stuff, right? Is the Kindle touchscreen at all?
No, the Kindle does not have a touchscreen.
Okay, the Kindle is cheaper though, right? It's what is it? $200.
The Kindle is
$5.
What is it?
Well, the smaller Kindle is considerably cheaper, isn't it? It's like $298. But the Kindle DX, which is the larger screen, is I think like it's not
within
much
a few
cheaper
dollars of each other,
right?
Yeah.
If you just want a dedicated reader, if all you want is a dedicated reader, which I don't understand, but if that's all you want a device that won't do anything else. The Kindle actually represents a decent value. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, compared to buying an iPad, if you really think you're never, ever, ever going to want to do email or surf the web or, you know, listen to a song or any of those things.
Right. But you can play media on the Kindle, I'm pretty sure, right?
I hear you can.
I hear you can. I don't know how you
video,
do it.
Video really sucks on it, I'll tell you that.
Well, e-ink screens aren't designed to refresh ever.
Right. That's what I mean. So you can play audio media. I think it will play MP3s, and I think
it'll play MP3.
I don't think it'll do, oddly enough, and correct me if I'm wrong, it won't do Audible books.
It does do Audible books.
Oh, it does do Audible. Good.
Yep. It does?
I'm pretty sure that's what I've heard.
I don't think it does.
Are you talking about the Kindle or the iPad?
Kindle.
The Kindle had a text-to-speech thing that they ended up getting beaten up by publishers because publishers felt like they were going to kill.
They were going to kill
the audiobook market, right? So the text-to-speech was meant to be, according to Amazon, it was meant to be an accessibility issue.
Right.
Now, was it meant to be an accessibility issue, or is it meant to actually, you know, take money from audiobooks?
Have you listened to the Kindle text-to-speech?
I have not.
Okay. It is clearly something that's designed for accessibility and not to replace Audible books.
Gotcha. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. I was just going to say I was wrong because I had to check real quick because it sounded bad coming out. Yes, the Kindle will do audiobooks from Audible.
It will?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm looking at the page on audible.com right now that says download your audiobooks to Kindle. So,
wow. All right.
It doesn't surprise me because doesn't Amazon own Audible now?
Am I getting that wrong? I'm pretty sure.
Oh, well, that changes everything right there.
Or their partners. I guess they're partners.
Something.
All right.
Well, if Amazon's involved and they're a partner, and I'm doing air quotes, they might as well just own you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. So McGraw-Hill's
getting all my information
CEO,
wrong
I think it was Tuesday, Monday or Tuesday, right? You know, day or two before
it was Tuesday,
the day before the keynote. He was talking on CNBC and, you know, he was asked about, you know, Apple's Apple's tablet device, and we didn't know anything about it then. He just goes, yeah, it's really cool. You know, they're going to be announcing it tomorrow, and it's going to be the iPhone OS, and we're going to have our books on it, and it's going to be really cool. And he just spills the beans, and we're all just like, does this guy understand that that's supposed to be secret information?
And I was thinking, wow, I wonder if he knows anyone at ATI, because they can start a support group now.
Oh, did ATI do something like that too?
Yes, they totally. Okay, so what happened with ATI? This was several years ago. It was a couple days before Apple introduced the new model of Power Mac Tower.
Mm-hmm.
That was going to be using new ATI video cards. So like 2 days before the keynote presentation at Macworld Expo, ATI does this big marketing thing about the new cards and talks about Apple and how their cards are in the new computers. And so Steve Jobs pulled all references from ATI from his keynote presentation.
Oh, wow.
The ATI CEO was going to be on stage speaking, uninvited. And Steve Jobs ordered all products related to ATI pulled from the expo floor. And it's not even his show.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. So the CEO of McGraw-Hill, what are they? They're one of the largest book publishers. Is it for generally?
They're the third largest textbook publisher.
Textbook, yeah.
Textbooks, yeah. Yes. Well, very important.
I was surprised to hear that they were only the third largest.
Yeah, I would have thought they would have been like one or two.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have as well.
But so it's, you know, obviously textbooks are just, would be fantastic on the tablet. And of course, you couldn't find a McGraw-Hill logo anywhere. And Steve Jobs actually had a slide where, you know, there were five companies announced for the iPad in the iBooks store. And it looked like one of the names on the middle row was pushed over into the center because there might have been someone else there, but it definitely, you know, McGraw-Hill wasn't there at all.
Apple addressed textbooks. Steve said something like, and we'll have a lot of textbooks too.
I think he said, and we'll have a lot more, you know, later this afternoon, we'll start talking with people again or something very like vaguely referencing how pissed off he was about McGraw-Hill.
Here's the thing though. I don't know that textbooks were ever meant to be part of the presentation anyway. This was very much geared towards mom and dad and your sister. I mean, this was not a geek show.
I feel like, though, that it would have been very, it's very, very important, because I think there are several school districts that have been, who are going to be experimenting or have with stuff, something like the Kindle. But I think the big disadvantage with doing it that way is, yeah, it's much cheaper, but you don't get color graphs and pictures and stuff like that. And with a tablet, you can.
I have no doubt that it's going to be a big part of it. I just don't think that was something that they're going to talk about during this presentation. The presentation, yep, I think, was very much geared towards consumer electronics. I mean, you can tell, yep, because at the beginning he says, we're the biggest mobile company on the planet.
Yep.
Which, you know, is debatable. I mean, it depends on how you you look at what a mobile company is. But, I mean, he came out and said, mine, all of you. You know, he didn't say, hey, you people who like the Mac, well, now we've got this thing you're going to like. Or, hey, you kids who are students, well, now we have this thing. Or, you school administrators, we have this thing you're going to like. He came out and said, mine.
Yep.
Everybody, you're all mine. Mm-hmm. I mean, and so I don't know that there was going to be like a, because the McGraw-Hill, I mean, proves himself clueless on Tuesday, certainly, by talking about it. But then he would have gotten up there on Wednesday, and there were no CEOs. I mean, it was the same team that it's been. It was Forstall, Schiller, and of course Steve Jobs.
Can I just add that Scott Forstall looked absolutely crazy in the promo video? Like, he looked certifiably nuts.
Yeah, but how about Phil? He's losing weight and looking sharp.
Was he?
Oh yeah.
He needs a new dresser though, doesn't he?
He does. He's still wearing the same. Well, they're all wearing the same outfits. Scott Forstall, I think, is still wearing the same bowling shirt. I think they're all wearing bowling shirts. Actually, they go out bowling after the keynote.
Yeah, not Jobs,
not Steve, but yeah.
Yeah, they go over to the Zeum. Is that what that is? That's right over there by Yerba Buena Center. They head over to the Zeum and they Scott Forstall
they hang out
rides
and
the carousel
pizza.
And. That's what happens.
In the good old time.
And they run over to the Metreon and they do, what is it, a psychedelic bowling?
I think so, yeah. And they look at where the Microsoft store used to be and laugh.
Yeah.
And move on from there. Mm-hmm. And where the Sony Experience store actually used to be and laugh too. That's kind of odd, isn't it? Doesn't Sony own the Metreon, and didn't they close one of the Sony stores there?
Yep. Well, did you ever go to the Sony store that was there?
Yeah, that thing's boring.
I never went to the Sony store. I went into the one for the video games.
Okay, well, the Sony store where they were selling their electronics, that needed to be closed. That was a rat hole.
Yeah.
I went in there a couple times just because I thought this would be a great way to be able to compare different types of electronics stores where companies are focusing their own products. And I walked in and I thought, man, if this is the best Sony can do, they need to pack up and just go home. Because it was a horrible store. And if someone wants to call me from Sony and complain about me saying the store was crap, that's okay. It was a crap store.
Well, I mean, really going way off topic, the Metreon just doesn't work for me. I mean, there are things in it that work for me, but it was meant to be like this whole new shopping experience. And really what you ended up with, I was talking to David Spark from the Spark Minute. He used to work at Tech TV. We were talking about when there was first rumored that Microsoft was going to start retail stores again. We both realized, having lived in San Francisco at the time, that we were probably – he actually knew. I was not aware that I had actually been to the Microsoft store that was in the Metreon. He knew that he had been to the Microsoft store at the Metreon, but it was sort of like you kind of passed through it. I mean, the things that I think of at the Metreon are the destinations, like Jillian's or like or the movie theater. And the rest of it, you're kind of wandering through, and suddenly you're standing in the middle of something somebody's trying to sell. It seems. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's about right.
I got way off topic. My apologies.
That's okay, because I'm going to keep us off topic. I love the Metreon because you can cut through the park back behind.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, that's
and
true.
And go through Metreon and get back out to the street, and you don't have to walk around the block.
That is pretty cool. That is pretty cool. I love the little park area behind the Metreon, actually.
I would actually like to pause this all before we get keep talking about the tablet. And since we're talking about the Metreon and all these things that we do during Macworld, I do want to say that I have tickets not only for the Macworld Blast, courtesy of Paul Kent. So the one of the two big parties going on during Macworld, which is not next week, not this week, but February... What is it?
I think it starts on the 8th or 9th.
I think it starts on the 9th.
I think it starts
it?
On the 9th. So
9th through the 13th.
9th through the 13th.
9th through the 13th.
So I have,
show floor keynote starts 11th through the 13th, right? 11th, 12th,
yeah.
And 13th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have 10 tickets for the Macworld Blast party, which is on Wednesday, I think.
No, it's on Friday.
Friday. Okay. So it's on Friday. Now, here's the deal. Here's how you get a ticket. And I haven't thought this through actually, but it sounded
well,
like I did. You do something involving Twitter, but here's what I want you to do. Send me a Twitter on the iPhone Alley, twitter.com/iPhone Alley. Send an at reply. As soon as you get out to Macworld and say you want one. And actually, I take that back. I will send out a Twitter. I'm seriously making this up as I go. I'm going to send out a Twitter.
I can't wait to hear how this comes out.
I'm going to send a Twitter on Wednesday saying, I have Macworld tickets, and here's where you're going to go to find me, and here's where you can get them, what day and what time. And you'll have to come find me, and first come, first serve. That's how it's going to work. So I'll send out
Macworld
a Twitter on the 10th.
Tickets.
Macworld Blast tickets.
Okay.
So that's
just so we're clear, because you said Macworld tickets. People might get really excited.
Macworld Blast tickets. I have 10 of them. And I also have 10 Cirque du Mac tickets.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a fun time.
Yeah, and that's on Thursday.
That's on Thursday.
Yep. So I'll be sending out the same Twitter for both events. And it's
you'll want to mention that the other one's for a different event, right?
It is a different event.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah. I'll have all this posted on iPhone Alley. So if it sounds like I'm insane and drunk right now, that's fine. You'll have specific details there.
You should make people meet you at the Metreon.
There you go.
At the Microsoft store.
At where the Microsoft store used to be. Actually, just go stand at the base of Roby.
I think I'm actually going to have, I'm going to stand, I think I'm going to say, you know, find me at the actual Moscone Center.
Yeah.
Just to prove that I...
If you want to do it the easy way.
I know. Just to prove that they're actually there for Macworld and they're not just homeless people with Twitter.
You know what you could do is totally screw with security people at Moscone and say, come meet me in the media lounge.
Oh, yeah.
They won't let anyone in the media lounge.
That's wonderful, yeah,
pack.
Screwing with those.
That's not really screwing with security as much as it is the people who want the tickets, right?
I think so, yeah.
Come to this place you can't get to.
Okay, so it'll be, let's just say, it'll involve Twitter and finding me. You'll have more details soon if you read iPhoneLA.com. And in next week's podcast, there will be a more coherent set of instructions.
Yeah,
how about that? I know. I'll give out those tickets even if I do have to give it to the homeless Twittering guy. Thanks, Paul Kent. Anyway.
Oh, we invited homeless people to your party.
Okay, so let's move on. We were talking about iBooks. The one question I have is there going to be DRM on the books or do we know?
There hasn't been any word yet as far as I know. However, the EPUB format, right, I believe, does support DRM. So maybe it'll be one of those things where publishers get to choose.
Mm-hmm.
Really, why wouldn't they do DRM?
Well, I thought that Apple didn't like DRM, right?
Apple doesn't like DRM.
But publishers do.
That's true, yeah. But are the books on the Kindle DRM'd?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
They're actually Amazon's. Aren't they a proprietary format?
Yeah,
it's totally proprietary.
Okay, yeah. then we'll see total like DRM on the books, but who cares? They're books. Nobody reads. Okay, so Jeff, the calendar app.
It has frackin' week view in it.
Yeah, it does. The calendar app looks fantastic,
I want that on my iPhone.
Yeah.
Yeah, that calendar app looks absolutely wonderful. It reminds me of back in the old days when I actually had a printed day timer.
Yep.
Right.
A big leather bound day timer.
Yes. And now here's the sad thing about me. I actually had a set of different colored highlighter pens just for my day timer so I could go through and color code everything in there. And when I looked at the calendar app when they were showing it off at the iPad event, just this wave of nostalgia came over me because I was thinking, oh my God, this is like what I had in paper.
Mm-hmm. It looks fantastic. Contacts also looks like a big leather bound contacts book or address book. And, yeah. So let's see, what do we want to talk about? The apps. Okay. So it also runs most iPhone apps.
Yeah. I'm curious to know which ones it doesn't.
Well, look at iPhone apps that don't work on an iPod Touch.
Okay.
And I would bet it's going to be pretty much the same. So if it's something that requires a digital camera built in, it's
right.
not
Yeah, good. Anything that requires a digital camera.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I would expect that's why they're saying most instead of all.
So it'll run most of the iPhone applications that are available in the store right now. It runs them at the standard iPhone resolution, so super tiny on that big screen, but there is a button that says 2x, which I think is actually 4x, but it zooms it in and you can use it. And they showed some games running as well as Facebook and other things. It's really fun to see Facebook totally blown up from the iPhone version on the iPad because it doesn't even redraw the text. It's kind of everything gets a little pixelated and a little not great, and definitely you want to have your apps rewritten, but it will run every single app that's on the store right now, which is, you know, wonderful for them and for, you know, consumers, because there are it says iPad runs almost 140,000 apps from the App Store, which is great. So there's the App Store, of course, on the iPad, but they will also be allowing developers to create iPad-specific applications, and that's what I'm very excited about because, you know, after seeing what Apple did with all of their applications that were on the iPhone and scaling it up to the big screen, they didn't just simply make them bigger. They look so much better and more useful. And it looks like even like the YouTube app, it looks like it's a better viewing experience than YouTube.com.
Yeah. It probably is.
Yeah. It looks fantastic. So I'm excited about all these apps. Even Photos, it has this really cool feature where so your albums are laid out in little stacks, and you can pinch to do a little peek at all those photos. So you can say, is this the right one? Nope. And you pinch it back, and you can preview photos that way. Mail has they've also optimized the use of landscape versus portrait. So instead of just kind of relaying it out in Mail, if you're in portrait mode, it just kind of does the standard drill down sort of idea with your messages. And once you tap on your message, you see the message in full screen. But if you do it in landscape mode, you have your list of messages on the side all the time. So you just kind of tap through and you can multiple select. And it's very cool. They've done a fantastic job. I've seen some remnants of the iPhone interface in those popover lists, but I think we're going to see some changes before we actually get it in our hands.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, but for the most part, it's very cool. Now, the alarm is going off. I don't know if you guys can hear it. Can you guys hear it?
Oh,
yeah. Okay.
7 o'clock.
9 o'clock.
Pacific.
Well, 7 o'clock Pacific, 9 p.m. here. But is it very annoying? Can I continue talking?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
Why is the alarm going off, though? I don't understand.
There's an air raid siren.
You remember?
At 9 o'clock?
9
in
June.
Remember in The Time Machine, how the people that lived underground would set off the sirens, and then the people that lived above ground knew that they had to go to the cave so they could be eaten? That's what happens where Michael lives.
I don't live here. I just
work. Tuesday at noon in San Francisco is when they do the emergency sirens.
Yeah, they do it every...
There was one right outside my house.
Ooh. Every day it happens here, but I only work here, so I don't sleep here. But yeah, so the really cool thing about the SDK is that you can create universal apps that work on both the iPhone and on the iPad.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure how that gets packaged, and when you go to the store and you download it, if it kind of gets you just the iPad version, but developers are able to create a universal sort of application and submit it that works on both. So we'll be seeing stuff, I'm sure, like Tweety and, you know, Beehive and that sort of stuff. You know, we'll see a lot of the apps on both platforms. And I feel like we're going to see a lot of developers who weren't iPhone developers hopping onto the iPhone OS because of the lovely experience you get with the, you know, the giant screen. Now, going back to me being a total curmudgeon, two things that are deal breakers for me with the iPad. One, no multitasking.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost a deal breaker. Almost a deal breaker because, you know, I can live with it, and I lived with it on my phone. And eventually, I'm sure I'll be able to jailbreak and install ProSwitcher, which I do on my phone. But the biggest one is no Flash or any plugins of any sort in the web browser, which means I can't go to Hulu and watch something, which means I can't watch Netflix streaming on it. It's just, I don't know why I need this thing without those plugins.
Because now, I can tell you exactly why I need it.
Okay. I would love to hear your reasons.
Okay. So I look at everything I do when I'm traveling and when I'm out and about, and I have to take my laptop with me everywhere because that's my portable computing device. But a lot of times I need something that's more than what my iPhone does, but I don't need the full horsepower of my MacBook Pro going with me everywhere. What I need is a satellite appliance for my MacBook Pro. And that's what I get with the iPad. So I can do those things that I typically need to do when I'm away from my office, but wouldn't otherwise need to have a full-on computer. So I can handle my email. I can handle the web browsing stuff that I need to do. I can write things. Mm-hmm. And all that stuff is there. And it's in a small package, and I can see myself going to many conferences and expos where I no longer will have to take my MacBook Pro with me. I can pack my iPad, my Bluetooth keyboard, and the power charger, have my iPhone in my pocket, and I'm done.
Okay. All right. That's wonderful, and it sounds great, but I feel like multitasking would help that quite a bit.
You know, I don't need multitasking. What I need, the word I came up with is application persistence.
Sure.
And what I need, what would be awesome for me, would be able to have, say, two applications together on the iPad at the same time. So like the screen splits in half and one half is one app, one half is the other app.
Yeah.
And when I tap a specific app, that's the one that unfreezes and comes to life. When I tap the second app, the first one freezes, so its state becomes persistent and it waits for me while I'm working in the second app. And what I'm visualizing with that is I write articles in a text editor application on the iPad, and then I have my article entry system, which is web-based, in another window. So I tap that, paste my content in, then tap my text editor and go back to that. That's what I would need for I'm doing air quotes again, multitasking. I just need a very simple form of application persistence.
Gotcha. Now, I have heard that stuff like Safari will be able to download stuff and toss it into a shared folder, which is the kind of thing that iWork will be able to use. So if you want to get documents to or from your computer, there's a shared space. So over Wi-Fi, you can. This is a new thing with the iPad, which is fantastic. You can actually mount your iPad on your desktop, move files around. You know, it's just like a little sandbox for documents. But you can't get access to the file system, but you can, you know, dump stuff on there and access it on your iPad. And developers can also say, hey, this is what my application reads. This is my special. So if, you know, BB Edit, I think do they have a special document thing? I'm just pulling stuff out of the air. Something with a special document, just, you know, couldn't come up with an example, but yeah, you can, it'll say, this is what you use. And so when you tap on that new file or maybe you download it or something from the web, actually, I believe that you dump this special file that application knows how to use. You don't even think about a file system. And I think this is interesting that Apple's going this way, but you open the app and it just knows about that file. So there really isn't a lot of file management. There isn't file management. There's no file browser. There's no finder.
You know, it's not that interesting if you think about what the Macintosh was supposed to be. It was supposed to be a computing appliance, essentially a platform where you don't have to think about your operating system. You don't have to think about your file structure. Everything just knows the things that those things are supposed to know. And you don't have to worry about version numbers. It's just kind of there. And the iPad sure sounds a lot like the original vision for the Macintosh to me.
Really?
Yeah. I have a feeling that if Steve Jobs had been able to make what the iPad is back when the Macintosh was first coming out with the way the file system works and everything, this is what Apple would have released back then. But the technology wasn't there yet. Our understanding of human-to-computer interaction wasn't there yet. And they just couldn't do that. But they came up with a system that laid the foundation so that we could eventually get to a point where we can have an iPad. So I think this is really more in line with Steve Jobs' original vision for the Macintosh.
And, you know, Michael, I mean, if you look at I've been thinking about this lately, too, because a lot of people have been bringing up, you know, why isn't there any finder on the iPad? You know, why can't I navigate and get to file systems? And I think if you think of some of the iLife apps that Apple has been using to somewhat replace the file system. Specifically, I look at something like iPhoto, right? So many people have a hard time getting iPhoto because they don't realize this is your photo document system. Like anything that's a photo in, I think, Apple's world, you dump into iPhoto and there it is. You pull it in and out of iPhoto and iPhoto integrates with all the other apps and look, there's my photos. And they've taken the same approach with the latest version of iMovie with movies, right? You dump all your video from your camera into iMovie, and iMovie manages your video. You really don't need to go to the Finder to manage that stuff once it's in there in Apple's world. Now, we can debate whether that's good or bad, but it seems to be something that Apple philosophically is into, kind of masking any kind of file system, I think, like you're alluding to on the iPad. So they just have this space, and then the app is aware of, oh, all these files exist on the system, and then the app manages those in some way. And whether it's Apple defining that management system or the app developer, I think we're going to see a lot more of that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think Apple really invented the way we look at files on a file system today, right? With the Finder.
Well, mm-hmm. Xerox PARC did.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, Xerox PARC created the concept, and then Apple figured out how to really make it work.
Okay.
How to market it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I guess it's fair that they can reinvent the way we look at files. It's going to be, like I said, this isn't, you know, that totally doesn't deter me. I have an iPhone, and I know that it's a little weird, and if I feel like if it became enough of a problem with an iPad, I think Apple would eventually change that or allow something extra, something that didn't interfere in a software update. But I don't think it's going to be that big of an issue. And even in iWork, they have the media browser kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it looks like it'd be very easy to just, you know, grab a picture and throw it in a spreadsheet or, you know, document or whatever. So that looks pretty cool.
Can I ask you one thing about on the multitasking? I mean, do you think that's something, because, you know, it turned out everybody was thinking we'd see iPhone OS 4.0, and there's still grumblings that multitasking might be part of 4.0.
Right.
Because I think I said it before the you know, tablet was announced or the iPad came out. A lot of people were wondering, well, you know, how do you, if it runs iPhone apps on at all, you know, how's it going to run them? And obviously we know now, you know, this black box thing or double size, but I still maintain, why can't iPhone apps, if there was multitasking turned on, why couldn't they run as little iPhone
widget-sized
widgets that you, in little windows that you could drag around, and you could have multiple sitting on your desktop? You know, not every app lends itself to that, you know, like games and things like that, but many little utility apps that I use would be great to have, you know, Tweety open up in one little window and AIM in another, and, you know, something
well,
else
I think
in,
that-
in another.
I think we, I'm going to, this is less of a bet and more of like me very highly hoping that we see this, but I think iPhone OS 4, I think we're going to see something that allows multitasking. Now, if you look at, well, if you think about why they didn't enable multitasking, one is because it takes up a lot of resources if you just have apps going crazy in the background, but two, and the thing they really focused on in the keynote addressing that is that they generally, people, you know, when they're designing software for this, they refer back to an application manager or a switcher or a task manager, something like that, that's very difficult for normal people to figure out and use because it's just, you know, it's a little geeky. But Palm has this wonderful method of presenting multitasking that makes tons of sense on a phone. You know, because on the Mac, we get it, you know, all the applications that are running for the most part are in our dock with a little blue light. Sure, we get that. So with Pro Switcher, as I said before, it's so obvious what's going on. You swipe to quit an app and you see all the apps that are open. And if your phone is slowing down or your iPad is slowing down, you know that you have to quit an application because that's just how it works with the computer. And it's just something that I think most people quickly understand if they don't get that initially. So I think we're going to see something from Apple that's on the same level, maybe a little more than Palm's solution, hopefully in 4.0 eventually. I think we're going to see
I've
something.
I've often thought, why couldn't we have a some sort of gesture that activates some sort of expose thing where I see a grid of my icons, and better yet, a grid of my icons with two little bars next to them, one showing the amount of memory that thing is using and the other showing the amount of processing power.
I doubt they would ever expose that, but
but I mean,
I can tell you, I'll tell you exactly why you'll never see that. And Michael, I'll tell you exactly why you won't see many of the things that you have just spoken about.
Okay.
And it's because your mom doesn't get it. And my mom doesn't get it. Right. And our moms are in line with standard consumers. And we're talking about the tech cool under the hood stuff that we all get into, but the average consumer doesn't give a rat's ass. They just want to know that when they launch their Google or they launch their email, that whatever it is that they expect to see is there, and they have no clue what the apps are. and they don't care. And that's okay. They shouldn't have to care. But that's exactly why so many of the things that we would love to see, where we kind of can look under the hood a little bit, we're not going to get that.
Okay. Let me come back to you.
Can I comment on that real quick?
Yeah,
sorry, I don't want to butt in. But it's funny that Jeff mentions that. So while I just said, you know, I'd like to see that thing, I think he hit the nail on the head. And Ken, I think we, you know, I spoke to you about this, is that the iPad is the device that all the nerds and the geeks and everybody want because it's so sexy and cool, but it's not built for them. And I think that drives them nuts.
Right.
Completely nuts.
Well, okay. So you were talking about my mom. You weren't being mean, so that's good. But
I was talking about your mom in a nice way. You know what? I'm sure she's a wonderful woman.
She is. Okay.
And
I like her
without even ever having met her.
Yeah. Okay. So when I told her about the iPad, she knew everything about it because she already went to the internet and checked it out. And she's not geeky, but you know, she tries to be because, you know, I tell her about these things. But she checked it out and I said, you know, there's no multitasking. She goes, what? And I said, there's no flash either. She goes, what? There's no flash? There's no multitasking?
Every consumer except your mom, who's clearly a step or two above.
Yeah. No, she, you know, when I gave her an iPhone and she wasn't geeky on the iPhone, she didn't understand why there wasn't flash on there. But I explained to her, you know, it doesn't make sense. I completely agree. I don't want flash on my iPhone, but I want flash on the tablet. But going back to the multitasking thing.
Because you like it running really slow and crashing?
It doesn't crash. It doesn't run slow, dude. It's great.
It does.
I'm going to jailbreak your phone.
Flash, I don't want it on anything.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Adam,
I immediately flipped over my YouTube and my Vimeo to HTML5, and I'm perfect.
I would love to see, you know, Flash sucks, let's be honest, but a lot of places use it. Now, if...
That doesn't make it good, though, Michael.
Oh, I agree.
A lot of people use Windows, too.
But dude, I want to watch Hulu. Yeah. I want to watch The Office and I want to watch 30 Rock on my tablet. That's just what
I'm
saying.
Apple doesn't want you to do that.
No, that's true. They want
Apple
me to buy
wants you
it.
To
They're
buy
available
it
on iTunes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Exactly. Oh, you're right. Never mind. But no, going back to...
Well, this is not a new thing for Apple to do, though, is it? I mean, the iMac came out without the 3.5 inch floppy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people went nuts.
Well, it's clear that they're trying to move everybody away from Flash, and duh, Flash is a competitor with QuickTime and that kind of thing.
I don't even think that's what it's about, because it wouldn't surprise me. I know that one of the stories this week was Netflix saying they're not going to have Netflix streaming on the iPad anytime soon, but that uses Silverlight. So and Apple, I would see Silverlight hitting the iPad before Flash will.
Yeah, well, I can see. I think Microsoft did do a demonstration of Silverlight video running on a phone, on an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's possible to, with some tweaks, to make that work. So, but it doesn't seem like Netflix is interested in doing that. But going back to the multitasking thing, and with what you were saying, Adam, with a gesture, I think that makes it perfect, because you look at the Mighty Mouse and the Magic Mouse, it's a one button mouse, and it's makes sense. You smack on the mouse, the entire thing is a button. It's the same button no matter what you do, but you can turn on the special right click gestures and the extra stuff that wouldn't normally you wouldn't run into and say, well, what is this? Because you would only know about it if you knew about it and you were interested in doing it. So actually, on my phone, for Pro Switcher, to activate it, there are many different ways to do it with buttons and, you know, short holds and stuff like that. But the way I have it set up is with a gesture, and you swipe up in a very specific way, and it's kind of tough to get, you know, used to. But it's made by it's done by someone who
It's sort of like what Jeff was saying earlier. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. You're proving Jeff's point.
You're getting it. I mean, you're confusing it. I mean, the fact that all of that stuff might be there means that you'd have to have a book for it. And if you have a book for it, it has the potential to scare people. And if you walk into the Apple store and somebody's showing you like, oh, you just go here and you touch this and you change this setting and you do that, then you've scared somebody off.
No, you have it. I'm saying you have it enabled by default. And if you want to use it, then you can, just like Exposé.
All right.
That's just what I'm saying. I think that people wouldn't have a problem with that.
I think people would have a problem with that.
Well, they're never going to run into it, dude.
Okay.
If they want it, then they can use it. And if they don't, then they won't know about it.
Okay, so picture someone who has an iPad sitting on their desk, and they go to grab it as they're getting ready to run off to a meeting, and they're looking only out of the corner of their eye, and they miss the edge, and they swipe their hand across it, and by chance they happen to invoke that feature. And now their iPad is suddenly looking completely different. They're on the way to a meeting where they have to do some presentation, and they're looking at this going, what the hell?
Okay, I'll tell you how you do this. And you just have a little toggle in settings that says multitasking on off, and it's off by default. They have a lot of stuff like that in the iPhone. They have caps lock in there. You know, if you want to enable caps lock, you have to turn it on, and then you guys, I don't know if everybody knows about this, but you double tap the shift key and then you got caps lock.
And it locks. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you put in some of those extra features for power users and disable every damn one of them and then ship the product, I can see Apple doing something like that. You know, like that the caps lock is disabled by default on the iPhone, and you could have your, I don't even see Apple doing real multitasking, but so application persistence on the iPad, it's disabled by default, but those of us that get what it is and want to use it, we can go turn it on. I can see something like that happening. I would actually enjoy something like that happening.
I still say this is the Apple for Apple. This is a consumer product, and I think that is the key word, consumer, and it's not for power users. And I'll point to the jailbreak community. How much has Apple really done to actively shut down jailbreaking? Not very much, because I think they realize that the people who want those power user features will go out and they'll jailbreak it, and then Apple doesn't have to deal with them when there's problems, right? Because they can just say, you jailbroke it, too bad, you're on your own. They want the people that are going to buy the product, use it what it's intended to be used for, how Apple wants them to use it, and they'll deal with those people at the Genius Bar. It's a clear dividing line, and I think it's a line they draw in the sand, and they just say, look, this is it. This is the device. This is the features. Take it or leave it. And they don't really care all that much, you know, what it's Steve. This is Steve's baby. And I think, Michael, you were talking about the awkwardness at the beginning, and I think you were talking about those few times during that keynote where he was just using the device.
Yeah.
And it was
obvious
that he was, like, into using the device.
Right.
Like, he
was just sitting there.
There
he forgot he was
sitting
out
there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it is what it is, and Apple has always done this, as Ken was pointing out earlier, with the, you know, losing the floppy and being the first to support USB, and Apple will just make decisions and say, this is what it is.
Well, floppy and
like the camera. You know, everybody's all peeved about the forward-facing camera, and it might eventually be in there, but this is the product, and this is the price, and you buy it or you don't buy it.
And see, I'm not getting even why you'd want the camera in there.
I don't understand why you'd want a camera, yeah.
Well, I'm holding this, and I can't hold it perfectly still, and my head might wobble a little bit while I'm talking, and pretty soon the person on the other end says, I'm sorry, I have to go get sick. I can't watch anymore. I'm having motion sickness from watching you hold that damn thing.
Yeah, I don't understand why you'd want it. I totally didn't think that a camera made sense on it. The only thing, honestly, the thing that's going to, that would make me say, all right, I'm going to buy this, is the flash thing. Or if, let's say, by chance, in 60 days, by that time, YouTube and Hulu have both completely switched over to HTML5 video, I'll get one. I just want to be able to watch my content.
I just believe that Apple just says, look, Michael, this product is not for you.
I understand that with regards to the USB thing and the floppy thing, Apple made a choice to move, and they do this a lot, they just made a choice to move into the future and just disregard the other stuff, the older stuff that's on the way out. And I understand that with Flash, because Flash does totally suck. On the other side of the coin, I totally hate Flash. I wish it was gone and dead, but it's around on Hulu and in YouTube, and you know, so that's why I would like to use it, mostly for the Hulu thing and as well Silverlight and Netflix. But I think the multitasking, I hope they resolve that.
They have another $500 product for you at Apple.
Really? Tell me more.
It's called a Mac Mini, and you plug it into your TV and you watch your Netflix and your Hulu.
I think I'm just going to do that. I'm going to install Windows on my Mac Mini too. Haha. No, I wouldn't do that. That doesn't make any sense. But okay.
No, it makes no sense.
So that is the iPad. Right? Do we have anything more to say about the iPad?
I think we killed it.
I think we killed it. Nobody's going to want one now. Or everybody.
I still want one.
Okay. Let's go around real quick,
and we'll tons and tons of money.
Let's go around real quick, and everybody, Jeff, you want one, right?
Yeah.
And you want which one are you going to get?
Well, it depends on how many pennies I save up. Because keep in mind, I work on a journalist salary, so
you get paid well. You're the managing editor. You're the head honcho.
That's true. I still will have to save up my pennies to get
yes.
an iPad.
So how long are you going to be saving up? What are you going to get?
Well, it depends on how long I can manage to hold off.
Yeah, because the 3G version doesn't come out for, another 30 days past?
Yeah, so if I can get one before 3G comes out, I'll do that. I'm totally fine with that. I'd like to get at least the 32 gig model.
Gotcha. Cool. All right. Ken, are you going to get one?
I have no idea.
You have to play with it first?
Do I want one? Yes. Well, no. See, here's the thing. I mean, I agree with everything that we've all said about the fact that it's for consumers. When I travel, I need to be able to do my show.
Yeah.
And what I was really hoping for was something that I would be able to get by with as a replacement for a laptop, because I need to. I'm still, when I travel, I'm still using the PowerBook G4, which is just, I love it. It's a great machine, but it's too slow and everything takes too long, and I can't, to run it at any kind of decent speed, I've had to go back down to Tiger. And so there are a lot of programs that I use at home on a daily basis that I can't use when I'm traveling. And so what I had really hoped for was something that I'd be able to replace a laptop with.
Yeah.
And if I were using a laptop the way my mom uses a laptop or the way my dad does, I would be able to. And so I'd, you know, be in line and I'd get the biggest one I could and still save money compared to what I would spend on a laptop. I imagine I will have one eventually, but I don't know that I'll be able to get it right away because I actually, you know, make less than journalists do.
We don't have to talk about money.
I'm sorry?
You can pretend. You can say which one you're going to get.
Oh, well, I mean, if money were no object, I would want the 64. I don't need the 3G.
Okay, cool.
I've been arguing with Bill Palmer from iProng about that. He says it's a toy if you don't get the 3G, and I say it's a toy
if you
do. Of
course he does.
And we should have gotten Bill on. I don't know what I was thinking.
I mean, I don't. This is not something that I'm going to... I mean, if I'm stuck in the middle of nowhere, but it has to be a decent middle of nowhere because it still has to have 3G service.
From AT&T, right, yeah.
Right. Then, you know, then I guess maybe I would want that. But chances are any place that I'm going to be using, it's going to have Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whether that's, you know, Starbucks or a hotel or at home.
McDonald's.
You know, McDonald's. Exactly. Yeah. This is not something I'm going to walk down the street and go, hey, I think I want to buy this album or I want to buy this song. Mm-hmm. You do that with your iPhone.
Yeah.
You don't do that with the 9.7 inch, you know, giant piece of glass.
I hope
that somebody could knock into you and knock out of your hand.
I can't wait to see some videos on YouTube of people talking on their iTablet and on their iPad.
Yeah,
talking on the
phone. Down the street with it against their ear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know it's going to happen. So, Adam, are you going to get one?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting the 64 3G model.
Yeah,
3G, so. Really?
Yep. Yep. So,
right. And what's
actually
the...
with that, I actually have to duck out.
Okay. Yeah, we went way over.
Yeah. So I'm gonna say goodbye. I'll have to give you my pick next week. And thanks for having me on. And I'll talk to you guys later.
All right. See you, Adam. Right. Thanks.
We'll miss you while you're gone.
Thanks.
All right.
I miss you already.
I miss him already too. Okay. So let's do our
Michael.
Yeah.
I'm lonely.
Well, I'm here, and Ken's here too. So we're going to do our iPhone picks, okay. But I just want to mention that iPhone Alley is hiring for real. We have money to give you to hire you for real as a job.
Oh, sweet. So I could get like a job.
You could totally do that. So here's how you do it. Here's how you apply. Go to iPhone Alley, any page you want. There's a link at the top of every single page that says, want to write for iPhone Alley? We're hiring. Click the We're Hiring button. You'll see instructions and a place to email all the important information. It would help us out so much if you're a talented person and you have experience to apply and help out at iPhone Alley. So do that. And so we're going to talk about our iPhone picks now. Ken, I'll let you, if you don't have one prepared, I'll let you go next after Jeff does.
No guarantee that I will have one prepared at that point. But
I can
please,
go after.
Jeff,
I can go after
go
Jeff
ahead.
Too. So Jeff, go ahead.
Okay. And so I'll kind of drag it out a little bit, Ken, to give you some more time.
This is what we need. We need to drag more stuff out.
Yeah. Because the show hasn't been long enough yet.
Yeah.
All right. So I typically do like production related or productivity related things and utilities and stuff. So I decided this week to do something a little more fun, but still kind of cerebral.
Well, you really are dragging it out, aren't you?
Well, yeah. I'm doing my best to help out Ken.
All right. I got one.
Okay. So anyhow, my app is...
Here it is. Here's how much it is by. Okay,
yeah,
what
so
is it?
Words.
Sorry.
Okay, and Words is sort of like Scrabble Online.
Words?
But Words.
Okay.
And
wait,
so...
Wait, is it Words or Words Among Friends?
Just Words.
Oh, okay. Sorry,
well,
go ahead.
I don't know. Maybe it's... Oh, well, when you launch the app, it says Words with Friends. But,
Words with Friends, okay.
Okay, but on my home screen, it says Words.
Right.
Okay, so the deal is it's like Scrabble, but it's online, and you play at your own pace. So you and your friends all sign up for your free Words accounts, and then you can start up games with each other. And then as you have time, you just hop into the application and go through your little Scrabble-like tiles and do your words and play against each other. And it's a really cool, fun little way to be able to play Scrabble against your friends at your leisure, and it's free.
Cool. So do you have to you have buddy lists and stuff like that? No, it's not free. It's okay. So you're talking about the free version.
Well, yeah, of course, the free version.
Okay.
I think the difference is that the free version displays some ads every now and then,
and fine.
The paid version does not.
Cool.
And since everyone except Michael is saving up for their iPads, get the free version and save a couple bucks. And Michael, you can get the paid version.
I forgot to go take my turn. Am I going to get the iPad? Right now, probably not. But when I see it and play with it and I get the, I start, you know, experiencing the reality distortion field again, I'm sure I'm going to buy one. So... But you know, you'll be updated on that as soon as that happens because of the podcast. So, Words, it's actually Words with Friends.
Okay, Words with Friends,
and it's free if you want to get the free version with ads. So if you're saving up for your iPad, Words with Friends free and looks awesome. So thanks, Jeff. And
sure thing.
My pick is Files by Olive Toast. And I believe I picked this before way long ago, but I want to pick it again because I'll explain it what it is first. There are a number of these file storage applications on the App Store. This is just the one that I use, and it allows you to store files on your iPhone just kind of in the same way you would on a USB key, except that you don't just plug your phone in and get access to it. You do it over Wi-Fi. So it runs a little web server, and you connect to it with your PC or your Mac, and it shows up in you know, using Bonjour. You click it. You can have authentication if you want. You can have a password on it. You don't have to. You drag your files onto it, and you just keep that stuff with you. So you can put pictures and video and music and all that stuff that you, and you can actually view it within Files on your phone, so it doesn't just store it. You can also look at any content that your iPhone will read. And you can do folders and all that stuff, but it doesn't have to be something that your phone can read. It can just be a dumb flash drive if you want. It'll do persistence, so it'll allow you to keep the phone on. I don't think persistence is the right word, but it'll force the phone to stay on while you're in the app, so you can put all your stuff on there and it won't go to sleep or anything like that. You can actually set a passcode for the file for the application itself, so someone who's playing with your iPhone can't get access to your documents. And the reason I wanted to bring this app up again is because the iPhone and the iPod have this, you know, problem that they've always had. That's not really a problem. It's just one of those Apple things where you can't say, oh, here's an album that I want to put on my iPod, but I'm not at my computer that I sync my iPod with. You can't just do that. You can't just drag it on there. So there was an album I downloaded while I was at the office. I actually sync with a computer at home, but I wanted to listen to it on the way home. So I opened up files, create a new folder and tossed this album from my iTunes onto the phone in files. And to my utter delight, I wasn't sure if this would work, but I hit play on the first one. I just tapped the first one. And when the first one was done, the next one started playing. And it was just wonderful for me because I just wasn't sure if that would work. So it's $4.99, files by Olive Toast. It's if you're looking for something that'll, you know, let you store files, if you haven't already gotten something like that, I think a lot of the other applications will do a continuous play thing, but files is the one that I use by Olive Toast. It's a very cool application. Now with continuous playback. So with that, Ken, what is your pick?
I was wrong. I don't really have one.
Okay. Well, what
I can tell you what my favorite app is lately, but it's so old. If people don't use it, I love the IMDb app.
Oh yeah.
And that's, you know, just because it was to the point where we would be watching a movie. My girlfriend and I would be watching a movie and be like, well, who's that guy? And, you know, have to go get the computer or something like that. But now we do most of our watching on the computer. So I've got the IMDb app on my iPhone and I now miss half the movie. Because I'm like, oh, hey, it's that guy. Oh, he was in that. Who else was in that? You know, and I follow it. It's just really fast and really cool. Much better because I was going to IMDb on mobile Safari. Track me down at Macworld, though. Anybody listening, track me down at Macworld because I have the coolest app on my phone and I can't tell you about it yet. But ooh. I've been told by the people who are developing it that I can show it to people at Macworld. Because that's I was going to tell you about it now. And then I was like, I can't yet. But track me down at Macworld.
Okay.
And I'll be Twittering where I am from time to time and all that stuff because I got a really neat thing to tell people about and show people, but it's not there yet.
I saw a really cool app that's under development that's I didn't sign anything, so I'll just talk about it. It's the square payment thing. The cool little, you just plug it into your headphone jack on the iPhone and then you can swipe credit cards and take payment
way. Right.
The little cube thing, the one I saw, it didn't work too well. It's still beta, but the software, it's being designed by Bobby Anderson, the same guy who used to work for Apple. He is very significant in designing the new Mobile Me. So when they went from .Mac to Mobile Me, it's incredible the way they designed it. It's very, very nice. And if you find someone who happens to be on that team at Macworld, you know, have them show it to you. But cool. Jeff, do you have a file app that you like to use, a file utility on your phone?
Yes. And hold on, I'll tell you which one I have.
Is it air sharing?
Maybe.
Is it a red icon?
Yes, it's the red one.
Okay, so air sharing is yours. And Ken, do you have one that you like?
I do not.
Okay.
I don't go anywhere. So why would I need to? Going from, you know, my office to the living room.
You can see that as a benefit. You don't have to pay for a lot of gas.
No, I'm totally cool with it. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's just, you know, you're talking about like, yeah, I'm going to drive over here and I want to take this with me and I can't be without it while I'm driving. I'm like, wow, I remember what that was like.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Okay. So let's see. I think we're done. iPhoneAlley.com/podcast is where you can get show notes as well as our iPhone picks. You can send feedback to podcast@iPhoneAlley.com. You can find Jeff Gamet at the Mac Observer, MacObserver.com, and Twitter.com/JGamet. Thank you for being here, Jeff.
Hey, sure thing. It's always fun. So, yeah, it's like our own little party on the internet.
On the internet, yes. And Adam Christensen can be found at the MacCast, MacCast.com, and Twitter.com/MacCast. Thanks to Adam for joining us once again. And Ken Ray can be found at MacOSKen.com, right?
Right, MacOSKen.com, and on Twitter at Twitter.com/MacOSKen.
It's a wonderful podcast. I love it. I listen to it every day.
Golly, thanks, man.
It's 15 minutes of the Mac News, Mac and iPhone and iPod Touch and iPad, right? You're covering the iPad now? Then you're not calling it the
Mac tablet netbook thingy? Not anymore.
I prefer that name, though.
Sadly. Well, Mac TNT is what somebody said they should call it. Because
tablet netbook thingy, TNT. Yeah, I like that.
No, That's all over. Now it's called the iPad.
You know, they used to call the, someone kind of coined the phrase for the Intel-based Macs, or Intel, what, how does it go? Intel, ICBM, Intel chip-based Mac, right?
Okay.
ICBM, Jeff, do you know what I'm talking about?
No, but it sounds wonderfully clever.
I'll edit this out. Okay. And
I always like, no, I always like Macintel.
Yeah.
That's what I always called it, but you know.
Yeah.
Now that now we just call them Macs.
Yeah, it is a Mac, isn't it? Cool.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Twitter.com/iPhoneAlley is where you can find me twittering as iPhone Alley, as well as iPhone Alley twittering for itself. All the stories from iPhoneAlley.com go right to that feed and you can check it out, and I also Twitter there from time to time. I actually Twittered the keynote because Cover It Live, they've been good in the past, but it went down, and so I just started Twittering. Twitter was up. Nobody was, I was expecting it, but a lot of people weren't. But so with that, another iPhone Alley podcast is done.
An internet. How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck, 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 yuck. No. Yuck. No. Yuck, yuck, no. Yuck, 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 yuck. No. Yuck. No. Yuck, yuck, no. No. You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all born with. We're born with 10 of them. We're going to use our fingers. Our fingers.
Communicator.